crunch time for the Black and Yellow, and I think they're doing what they can to set themselves up, at least with skills and talent, to find a way to pull it out in the end. So I guess the personnel are there. Now it's about using them correctly, you know. I cannot wait to see what Haaland does, obviously. Like, I think he's going to be an awesome addition to the team with his size and his pace. Like we talked about before, that's just lethal right there. Like, if I'm Bayern Munich or if I'm Red Bull right now or Mönchengladbach, I am very nervous about what Dortmund is capable of. But at the same time, as a Dortmund fan, I'm pretty nervous about what we're going to do as well, because we've been in positions where we've been superior before. We've had the talent, we've had, you know, the resources to be on top, and then something really stupid goes wrong and we blow our chance or whatever. Last season we blew a 9-point lead that we were 9 points up on Bayern in February, and we managed to lose it. And that was like the most points Bayern had overcome at that late in the season. And I'm hoping this year it's a little different, in that if we're going to be ahead by 9 points in February, we're going to be ahead by 15 points or 20 points when the season ends. I think we're ending right around, is it like early May this year that it ends, late April?
I don't know really, like maybe early May, because this year there is like the European Cups.
Oh,
for...
yep.
Yeah, so I think it's gonna be early May, because there's also the Champions League final that plays around the 25th, May the 25th.
Yeah.
So I think it's gonna be early May. Yeah.
I mean, we'll be playing May 25th too, so like it'll be awesome to go back to back, right, with the Bundesliga title and then the Champions League title. That'll be fantastic, right?
I mean, if that happens, man.
Oh.
Like, that would be epic.
That'd be fantastic. Like, that would have to be probably one of like the highlights in my entire life in terms of like sports moments of all the teams I've cheered for. You know, I've seen my hometown city, their professional team, I've seen them succeed in like hockey. Our football team is garbage. The basketball team I've seen win a championship, but like that, I don't think anything could compare with Dortmund winning the Bundesliga and the Champions League in the same month. Like, that would have to be one of the best months of my entire life. They would have, like, it would take a lot to ruin that month.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be the buzzkill or anything, but you know what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a championship team.
We don't.
Do you get it?
Yeah, we're capable of winning the Bundesliga. But you're like the rest of Europe, I think, especially like I'm looking at Liverpool specifically. I don't think, like, I can't envision a way that we would beat Liverpool if we played them in the Champions League. And like, we're not even close to playing them yet. We're still worried about PSG, and PSG, we're going to have our hands full with them. But I mean, I'm optimistic, but at the same time, I'm cautiously optimistic. Dortmund has the opportunity to prove that it's more than just, you know, a competitor. They want to show that they're a championship club. And right now, I don't think they've done anything to suggest that. But you know, sometimes championship clubs they start slow and they really come together at the end, and that's what makes them a championship club. You know, if you can get the job done early and then finish strong, that's going to be enough to win. But like, even then, I don't think anyone can beat Liverpool at this point. Like, they haven't lost in, I can't even, it's like, they haven't lost since the summer, I think, in terms of any, like, league matches or non-friendlies. I'm assuming the summer U.S. Champions Cup or whatever, when Dortmund and Liverpool played in Indiana in the United States, like, I'm assuming that counts as, like, a friendly more than anything.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that was still the last time Liverpool lost any match whatsoever.
Yeah. They didn't lose a competitive game since 1 year, like 1 year ago. It's the last time they lost.
Wow. That is absurd. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm so happy for Jurgen Klopp. Like, Jurgen Klopp,
of course, yeah.
He deserves that. And I like Liverpool too, you know. They're our sister club. So like, it's cool to see them doing well, but I'd prefer to see Dortmund doing better too.
Well, you know, we all do, but when Like, realistically speaking, when you look at Liverpool playing, as you say, they didn't lose a match. They didn't lose a competitive game since last year. And when you watch them playing, like, you see, like, yeah, okay, they're human beings too, you know. They make mistakes, you know. They miss important chances. But at the end, like, when there's, like, at the end of the day, like, when we make the sum, we see, like, that they are winning games, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what we're lacking right now as a team, is that we're lacking that championship mentality, and that, like, even on paper, with the players we have, like, when you go to the transfer market page of Borussia Dortmund and you see all the talent they have, you're like, oh my God, this is the team to be, you know, this is the team who's going to get the champions, the Bundesliga, who's going to get the DFB Cup and maybe go further in the Champions League. But then when you watch the games, it's a different thing. You have all this talent, and it's like, you know, I don't know if it's still the case, because I didn't play FIFA 20 yet. But in old FIFAs, when you make your ultimate team, when you put players from different countries or from different, you have this red line in between them.
The chemistry
is that there is no, no chemistry. There's no connection, and it's exactly what's happening right now with Dortmund in the last games. I mean, if we, maybe this year we're not gonna get anything. I'm comfortable with that. You know? But if we continue with the same rhythm, we're gonna be just that, you know, that interesting German team that youngsters go to in order to become like world class sensations. That's not gonna get us further. That's not what got us the back to back Bundesliga in 2011 and 12 under Jurgen Klopp. Somewhere got us like the DFB Cup in the same year.
Yeah.
You know, what got us that is that we had very like low profile players who came from smaller German teams, who came from the Borussia Dortmund Academy, and who didn't have like what Bayern had at the time or what any other team had. The only thing that they had is that they were, you know, they had that confidence.
Yeah.
And it comes from Jurgen Klopp, of course.
Yeah.
But then when you see the you know, the entire Borussia Dortmund squad this year, when you see like players like Brandt, Witzel, Hazard, you know, Jadon Sancho, Marco Reus, Paco Alcacer, Hummels, we have Berkey, we have Hakimi, we have Piszczek. You know, we have everything we need. We just added Haaland to the equation. We have players like Moukoko and Giovanni Reina, Toby Rasho, who are like right now training with the main team. So the talent is there. You know, we are like on paper, we are, you know, pimps.
Oh yeah,
we are pimps.
We're the kings.
But when we go, we're the kings of football. But when you go to the fucking games, we're like, like a little, you know. We're bears, you know. We're bears. We're lions.
Oh, yeah.
But when you go to the football field, we're like, you know, little sheep.
Yeah.
You know, little.
Like it's like, if we're talking about bears and lions here, like you don't want a team of lions, tigers, and bears, because lions, tigers, and bears don't work well together. They're just all very fierce predators. But if you're a team of all lions or all bears, or all tigers, then you've got that chemistry and you've got that unity, and that's what Dortmund's lacking right now. I don't know if the chemistry is an issue that stems, you know, from management, or there's like disconnects between, you know, Favre and the players, or if there's like miscommunications in terms of like the responsibilities of each other. Like that stuff that like we don't really get to see from the field. We just get to see that the chemistry is clearly missing, and that's where it kind of puts us, like, as people who want to talk about it and, like, try and diagnose the problem, it limits what we can do with that, because there's, like, we don't know why the chemistry isn't there other than it's not there. We can speculate and we can make educated guesses, but, like, at the end of the day, that's, like, down to the manager, the training staff, the players themselves, and what goes on in the locker room, you know? Or the training room, I think they call it. The dressing room. Is that what they call it in football? Because I know in America it's the locker room, but, like, I don't think I've ever heard them call, like, I've never heard, like, European football refer to it as a locker room.
I don't know, really. I didn't pay much attention to it. I call it the locker room
as
well.
It must be FIFA that's clouding my mind then. Too much FIFA 20 lately.
Yeah, I think it's the locker room, but maybe some people call it the you know, closet or whatever. You know.
The hideout.
You know, but yeah, it's okay. You know, that's cool. What? We wish the best for our team. Right now, they are training in Marbella in Spain. The whole team is preparing. I think they're going to have a friendly.
Yeah, I think the January 11th, we have one, I think. Let me see if I can check that. Because I know we resume league play on the 18th of January. And I can't remember. I think it's with Augsburg, is it?
Yep. It's Augsburg.
So that's a great game for us to win and get right back on track early. You know, we started the season with Augsburg, and I'm pretty sure, if I remember, that game went fairly well. And then things started to kind of like unravel, and that's where we kind of just did, like, no one really understood what was going on because we had all the talent. Yeah. But it became clearer as time went on that the chemistry was lacking. And then, you know, minor injuries, you know, setbacks, you know, players returning from international leave late, and then just like a lot of like disputes that were more internal. And like, I think to the club's credit, they do a good job of like keeping a lot of the drama that would stem from a lot of those incidents. They keep that out of the eye of the public, because in the public's eye, the public wants to see a club that looks organized and unified, and, you know, everyone wants to be on the same page. And as a club, you want everyone to see that you're on the same page. And so when they're able to, like, I feel like Dortmund does a good job of, like, managing kind of the negative press around them. Or they don't turn a one-day story into a two-week story. Because that's where things really start to unravel when you've got chemistry issues, is when you've not only got chemistry issues, like, internally, but then you've got the media exploiting it and then dramatizing it, and then it gets super sensationalized, and you've got speculation from pundits and all this other stuff that just adds to the negative attention. But I think Dortmund does a good job of, like, containing that, and at the very least, they appear to stay on track, but at the same time, it leaves a lot of us wondering, you know, what is going on the training grounds, you know, what's happening in the team meetings, you know, and as much as we want to know, I don't know if it's better if we would know or if we don't know. I just want what's best for the team, you know? Like, I just want to see the players play, but I want to see them having fun too. Because, like, I think we play better when we look like we're having fun. You know what I'm saying?
The fact that Borussia Dortmund executives are able to keep all these, you know, problems, all these conflicts inside, it's because Borussia Dortmund is a publicly traded company in Germany. So if they leave every problem out there, the stock is not going to be, you know, stock is not going to be good. Shareholders are not going to be happy. So they might as well just try to keep that in the inside. But yeah, jumping on what you said earlier, that it was, you know, as a professional football team, yeah, we shouldn't have, like, unnecessary problems. Like, drama, as you call it. We should focus more on, you know, on the things that we can work on. Because as a professional football club, like, you're going to have so many problems as you go during a given season. You're going to have injuries. You're going to have players who are underperforming. You're going to have players who want to leave. You're going to have fans who do fucked up shit on the stands, and you have to pay fines and stuff. You're going to have, you know, maybe a manager or a sporting director who's not doing very well, and you're thinking about replacing that person. So, you know, you have to manage that shit. So when we look at small pity problems, like players who do not come back from, you know, international duty earlier, or players who, you know, do things in the dressing room, say things to the media they shouldn't say, disrespect a team or something. That's unnecessary. But we're not having any of that problem. Like, some other teams are having more than that, and we're thankful for that. We are what we call a family team.
Yeah, we're definitely a family team. We work, like, everything is it's like a tight knit community almost. Like, we're. There's not, like, I mean, there's like obviously like a hierarchy in terms of who's in charge and like who's the parent, so to speak. But everyone's like, we're all in the same boat here, or they're all in the same boat together. Like they're, it's not one person doing their own thing. It's not like a one man show. Everyone works together and works with each other and does their best to support each other. But also, when you're family, you're accountable to each other. And I think that's something that Dortmund like takes to heart. You know, they're accountable to each other. They're accountable to themselves. And you know, the players are accountable to the training staff and the managers are accountable to the owners and the executives. And then at the same time, they're all accountable to like the players and managers to make like the executives, it's like on them to make sure that they're doing what they can to ensure that the players and managers have the support that they need and the resources they need to get their job done to the best of their abilities. Like it's not, there's not one person or one puppet master running the whole show or anything like that, like you would find maybe at other clubs that are more like, I guess, less family, I guess just like less family oriented and more like numbers or statistics driven. Like there's more to Dortmund than just winning the championships, but at the same time, like the goal is always to get to the level where you're winning championships. So there's like a balance between the family and the winning, and it's working to build a winning family, I guess, is how I would describe it.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we are that way, and that's why, you know, supporters like feel close to the club, feel like they are a part of the team, and we are a part of the team. That's for sure.
Yeah, there's like an emotional connection.
We have like, yeah, a deep emotional connection. Yeah. What do you think about Paco Alcácer? Because there are news like he is very unhappy right now at Dortmund. Think that it's the injury that set him back, or it's more like Lucien Favre's choices?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think anytime a player who's always as like Paco Alcácer is one of like the most passionate players out there. Like he's passionate Paco, so to speak. He loves the game and he loves playing, and he came to Dortmund to not only to play the game but to play it well and to develop his own skills and prove to Barcelona that they it's kind of like almost like he left Barcelona and he came to Dortmund to show Barcelona what they were missing. And like for the first like whatever 6 months or whatever when he was with Dortmund last season, he was absolutely phenomenal. He, you know, no injuries, he was just constantly scoring goals. It was ridiculous the pace with which he was scoring goals. He was scoring goals like so, like his goal frequency, like his goals per minute was absurd compared to, it was like twice as good as the next best player in the Bundesliga in that category. But also, you know, injuries started to affect him, I think, towards the middle and end of last year. I'm thinking back specifically to a time when he came back from injury and he was struggling to really get back into the rhythm of the game. And then Marco Reus had a PK opportunity, but instead of taking it, he gave the ball to Paco and let Paco get a goal and get himself back involved. And that, to me, that kind of builds on that family mentality that we talked about. You know, Marco Reus, you know, sharing the wealth, or, you know, he could have kept the goal for himself and guaranteed a goal, but he said, hey, you know, yeah, Paco's been struggling and I see that, and I want Paco to see that I see that, and that I want him to know that we want him to score just as much as he wants to score. And I think this year, Paco's injuries have been a little more frequent and have been a little less, they've been a little more unfortunate, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Like his injuries have come at poor times, and they've really just kind of, it's been like almost setback after setback, it feels like, for Paco. And when you're as passionate as Paco is about being on the pitch and being involved and contributing and helping your team, it can get really frustrating when you know you can provide that spark that your team looks like it's missing, but you just don't have that opportunity because you're injured. And then when you come back from injury, it's easy to, like, when you believe you're healthy, it's easy to think that you're ready to get back into the game right away full speed. But a lot of times it's not necessarily in your best interest or in the team's best interest to get right back into the action. And I think that's what Lucien Favre has been a little more cautious about this year. I think he's been a little more, I don't want to say judgmental, but he's been a little more cautious about throwing Paco right back into the heat of things, because of the injuries and the frequency with which they've come. And I think that that bugs Paco, because I think Paco sees, like, he sees it as, I'm not getting played because the manager doesn't think I'm good enough, but I know I'm good enough to be out there. And when you combine that with the frustration of just not being able to be out there through no fault of your own when you are injured, like, it's just, it eats at you. And I think on one hand, you could say it might be an ego issue where he's got to, like, put his ego to the side. But on the other hand, I don't think it's really an ego issue with Paco. I think it's really just a desire to be playing the game because of how much he loves it. Because when you watch him and he's out there scoring goals, I mean, there is no one who's having more fun than Paco. Like, he is like what every kid yeah. dreams of. He, like, they see him play and they watch him, like, having the most fun you could possibly have without being, like, an arrogant, like, showboaty. Like he's not, like, on Ronaldo's level of skill or talent, but his passion, in my opinion, it, like, rivals some of the most talented players in the world, even if he's not at their skill level. And I think there's something to be said for that, because he's a guy who's always working to get better, always trying to contribute in any way he can. And when you're not able to contribute to what you believe is the best of your abilities, it's frustrating. And I think that's been really bugging him this year. And I don't necessarily think it's entirely because he feels he's being shorted on playing time, but I think the injuries kind of already put him, like, they already eat at him a little bit, and they kind of get in his mind. And so when you add his lack of playing time this year to that equation, it's just really frustrating for him. And I hope we get to see him stay, and I hope we get to see more of Paco in the upcoming 5 months, because we all know what he's capable of. But I mean, at the same time, I don't want to see him get frustrated or bothered if he's not getting the opportunities that he feels he deserves. Because I think another player who probably could believe he deserves a lot more opportunity would be Mario Götze. And Götze, I mean, as far as I can tell, doesn't seem unhappy with Dortmund or anything like that. And I mean, I think we've talked about this before too. I wouldn't even be surprised if he's transferring at the end of the season, or if he goes and plays elsewhere. But, like, I think his mentality is a little different than Paco's, and I think part of that stems from Paco dealing with more injuries more recently, and part of it stems from, like, Paco's passion. Like, not that Götze isn't passionate, but, like, I think Paco might be the most passionate player on Dortmund, and I think that's reflected in how he plays.
Yeah, of course. I see that.
But what do you think about it, too, obviously? Because that's just, I mean, I'm an American who's trying to formulate opinions about football, or soccer, as they say here. But you're someone who's been watching the game for much longer than I have, and you probably have a better grasp of the situation.
You know, I'm not really a technical, you know, watcher. I'm more like, you know, the person who throws stuff at the TV. But, you know, but... for Paco, it's like, it's very difficult because it's very difficult because he can be the most consistent player in the squad, up there with Jadon Sancho. He can be scoring goals. He doesn't like to have the ball a lot. You know, you never see him with the ball trying to dribble players or trying to do something. He takes the ball, passes the ball. When he gets the opportunity to shoot, he takes the shot. He's a great player. He doesn't like to keep the ball a lot. He likes to score, you know. The problem is he gets injured in a very critical, you know, part of the season where we're not like having the best, you know, we're not like performing at our best. So for Lucien Favre to include him right after coming back from injury, it will be like a risky move. And we know that Lucien Favre really doesn't put out risky moves a lot, unless he, you know, he plays like some stupid risky moves every now and then. But the real risk taking, you know, he's not a risk taking.
He's not a gambler like something. Jurgen Klopp is like all in. Like he is ready to bet the house on everything. Like he is committed.
Did you watch when you talked about him being a gambler? Did you watch the game against Everton for the cup?
Which one?
They played yesterday. Did you watch that?
Oh, where'd the audio go? Oh, there you are.
Can
Yep,
you
yep.
still hear me? Yeah. Did you watch the game yesterday? Liverpool
I did
against
not, but I was
Everton?
getting updates on my phone, and it looked like there was. It looked like I think Liverpool scored very late, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, Salah scored in like the 4th minute, didn't he?
No, that's the game before, but yesterday Liverpool played Everton for the FA Cup, and one of the games. It's not like the
Right.
final game or anything. And the FA Cup just Everton just like released their former coach and they hired Carlo Ancelotti. So because Liverpool had so many games, you know, with like 2 days in between, Jurgen Klopp decides to play with the second team, and he played all players were from the second team except Milner and Lallana, and Milner got injured like at the 10th
Oh
minute,
my
I guess.
goodness.
So they had to replace him with a youngster who's like 17 years old who played in his place. And the whole team was like second team. There were no Salah, no Firmino, no, you know, no Mane, no Van Dijk, nothing. Oh, there was a what's his name? Gomez,
Oh.
the defender. His name is Gomez. So they played and they won 1-0, and they scored like right, you know, towards the end, like 79th minute or something like that. But that was a fucking big risk because, you know, you are because as a team, Liverpool are leading like the table right now with like
Yeah,
16
it's
points, or I don't
ridiculous.
know, they're like 16 points ahead. So, and the FA Cup is not a very important thing in England, but it's still a trophy, you know, it's still a title. So when you are like 16 points ahead, why would you push only, you know, second team players? You can put in like a few, you know, it can be like 50-50. You put five youngsters with six, you
Yeah.
know, experienced players, or you know, but when you do that, when you put like all the youngsters out and they play against Everton team, and we know how teams, you know, how they rebound after the change managers. We saw that with Bayern mentioned, you know, when you change managers, a team is like a different one. So he puts all these players out there, and if he lost, he would have got like kicked out of the FA Cup, and that would be like I don't think so. I don't think that they're gonna blame him because the form he's been like the way he's been leading the club lately has been amazing. But there will be like questions. Why would you like, okay, we are leading like
Yeah.
16 points ahead, you can play the players. It
Yeah,
doesn't
like if they get
matter
injured or
if we
something,
draw the
like it
next
like
game.
there's they're already they've already won the Premier League essentially.
Yeah, but he does that. He puts that risk. It works for him. A youngster scores his goal. It was a
I just
magnificent
watched
goal, by
that
the way.
highlight because I wanted to
And
see it, and that was ridiculous.
yeah.
Like that looked like a Felipe Coutinho specialty right there, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a very good goal. I watched the game live because I watch most of Liverpool games when I can,
Oh,
because they
yeah.
are entertaining. Yeah, I see. When I watch Liverpool games, I see 2012
Oh, absolutely.
Borussia Dortmund. I swear to God, because these like quick counters and high pressing game, you know, discipline defensively. That's what Borussia Dortmund was all about. But back in 2012. That's what got us to the Champions League final. You know, that team spirit, that confidence that we're gonna win at the end. So let's just stick to our, you know, let's just stick to our strategy. Let's stick to our game plan throughout the year, and we are confident that by the end
Yeah.
of the year we're gonna win. That's why I love watching that team. But they are youngsters as well. I mean, most of their players are like no older than 24, 25. So it's fun to watch.
That's just crazy to me. They're all
That's it, yeah.
like I hear 24, 25 and like I remember when I was younger that would sound old to me, but like I'm 23 right now, and like that's probably what like the average age of every player in that Liverpool squad yesterday was, if you think about it, which is like absolutely crazy. Like I don't, that's just, I'm like, I don't know, that's just mind-boggling for a guy like me who like who loves sports and he's loved sports his entire life. And like I've always thought of like professional athletes or even like college and amateur athletes, like right below the professional level, I've always thought of them as like people to look up to. But now it's like when I looked up to them, part of the reason I looked up, and I put up in air quotes, was because I was younger than them. And now like they're my age, a lot of these dominant athletes. And that's like thinking about young players going out and just playing like an entire roster of kids my age winning an FA Cup match, even if it's against Everton, who's been going through trouble right now. Like that's crazy.
Yeah, that's what because like if you think about teams from like I'm from the 90s, you know, I was born in 1990. I'm 29 years old. So I started watching football since I was like 5-6 years old. So I watched like 96, 97, World Cup 98, World Cup 2002. I was a fan of Real Madrid. I was a fan of Brazil, Brazilian national team. I watched lots of football games. And back in the day, what you would see is that you would see like teams with players, coaches or staff or anything, they would like give only the players who are, you know, old and experienced the opportunity to play. So you would see, for example, 2005 Milan who like played Liverpool and lost in the Champions League, I guess. Yes, it was in 2005, that game where Milan won, like, they didn't win, like Milan was ahead 3-0 by halftime, and then Liverpool equalized and won in penalties, I guess. And Ancelotti was the coach at Milan, but at the time. So when you see that squad, you see that they are like people who are like players who are like 25 and above. There's no 19 years old. There's no 20 years old. There's no 21 years old. But now things have changed, and part of it is what made Borussia Dortmund successful at the beginning of the decade, because these changes showed that young players are the future. You know, they can be as good, if not better, than experienced and old players. So that put the emphasis on the fact that teams should look more into what they already have in, you know, in the youth ranks or in the academies, than to go out and to buy like, you know, 20 or 30 million players. Because back in the day, $30 million like deal was,
oh, that was huge. Yeah, that was, you know, like was insane. Massive.
When Cristiano Ronaldo got, you know, when Real Madrid bought Cristiano Ronaldo from Manchester United, it was like 80 million, and it was crazy at the time. And it was like 2012, I don't remember, 2011 or something like that. But then, you know, right now we see like players like Mbappe, who is valued at 200 million, and Dembele, who was, you know, who was sold to Barcelona at 100 million euros. When you see these figures, you really, you know, your jaw drops. You know, it's insane. Where is this going? You know, in like 5 or 10 years, players will start costing like, I don't know, 300 million,
yeah, like
500
like,
million.
You know, in what's the next Jadon Sancho at the start of the 2030 decade? What, like, how much is someone going to have to pay to get the young star of that generation? Like, it's crazy how expensive players are.
Yeah,
and like, you know, is it going to continue? Like, a lot of questions about, is it going to continue? Is the price of players going to continue to rise, or is it going to like cap for a little while? Like, there's a lot, you know, that we don't know yet, and that's like, I don't know. It makes for an interesting future, to say the least.
Yep, exactly. And we are very excited to see what the future holds for us. You know that we have reached 318 subscribers in
really?
The YouTube channel.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
Thank you to all of you, to all 318 of you. Or I guess I know I'm one of those subscribers. So thank you to the 317 other subscribers.
Yeah, and yourself as well. Come on, please include yourself. You are a subscriber to our channel. You should thank yourself, bro. Should be
thank
happy
me,
and proud.
I'm welcome.
For people who are listening, yeah. For people who are listening who are not who don't know what we're talking about, there's a channel on YouTube. Just type Ultimate Borussia on YouTube and you're going to see our YouTube channel where we put videos of funny stuff, you know, interesting stuff, stuff you have never seen before from Borussia Dortmund players, from ourselves. So make sure to go there and to subscribe to see, you know, new stuff and just,
yeah,
you know, hang out. And we have a Twitter, we have an Instagram.
Yeah.
We are
we're working on connecting all of the profiles together, you know, making content that kind of fits each of the different platforms, but that's still all connected under the Ultimate Borussia headline. You know, we want people to recognize the name when they see it from, like, if they know our YouTube channel, we hope that if they search us on Twitter, they recognize it when they find Ultimate Borussia's Twitter. And we have articles that link to our website. You know, there's all kinds of content we've got, and we're always working on getting better and more content out for you guys to enjoy.
Yeah, and this message right there is like the message we just delivered is like an Easter egg, because few people are gonna stay till this late in the podcast. Like, most people like leave towards 10 minutes, you know, 15 minutes. But few of our very, like, you know, very
diehard,
loyal
committed
fans.
committed
diehard, yeah you are listening to this exclusively, so you
absolutely
be proud
any
as well.
Anything that you guys are willing to commit to Ultimate Borussia, we are going to commit tenfold back to you. I think I don't know the math on that, but like, I'm going to go ahead and stick with whatever I just said. I don't know the exact math, but we are committed to providing the best content that we can for you, as well as you are committed to consuming our content. We appreciate that you guys have an interest in whatever we have to say, because like I always say, I'm just an American kid with an opinion on Borussia Dortmund and a love for the black and yellow. So it means a lot to me when I see that people are enjoying the content that we're putting out or reading the articles I've written. And I'm glad that, like, I don't know, I'm glad that I've got this opportunity to work with you. I mean, I enjoy a lot of it. And whether people want to continue to commit to it or not, I'm going to keep working on it because I love it that much. So I hope you guys are able to find as much enjoyment out of the content I'm creating as I'm able to find. Because it's a lot of fun for us, but it's a lot of work too. So we appreciate that you guys are willing to give us an ear and give us a click here and there. It means a lot. Even though it doesn't seem like it, I promise it means a lot.
Yeah, it means a lot to us. And just so you know, for our listeners, because Ryan knows already, Conor McGregor is one of our, you know, diehard fans. He always listens to us. Because one day we made fun of him and he's like, okay, I gotta locate these guys and beat the shit out of them. So he's always like listening to our podcast. So yeah, that's it. I mean, we've talked. Do you have anything else to add, Ryan?
No, I think we covered all the basics. It's a new year, 2020. We've got a lot of things in store for Ultimate Borussia, and I'm excited to see what the year brings for Dortmund as well as Ultimate Borussia. Hopefully, if Dortmund can improve, I feel like it gives us more to talk about and more to write about. Or, you know, we'll talk about what's going wrong. We're gonna do our best to continue to bring you guys thoughtful perspectives and unique content. And I don't know. I'm happy with what we're doing and I enjoy it. So let's keep the ball rolling and hopefully we can get more frequent podcasts out, some more frequent YouTube videos, some more unique YouTube videos, unique. Articles and kind of like trivia style posts on the website. There's a whole lot we have in store and we're excited to get it out to you guys.
Yep. So stay tuned and I guess we'll talk to you
also
next time.
Before I forget, don't forget tomorrow. So I was checking this. Dortmund actually has a friendly tomorrow It's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the United States, which I think in Germany that would be 4 p.m., I want to say. We have a friendly with, I think the club's name is Standard.
Standard de Liège. I started speaking French all of a sudden. It's a fucking Belgian.
Oh, I'm Belgian. Why didn't I know that? I'm a little bit of everything. I'm a little German, a little Belgian, and then a little Syrian, a little Lebanese, and then all kinds of random European stuff. Shit. Yeah.
you are all over the place.
I got a little bit of everyone.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, you're right. They are gonna play Standard Liège, which is one of the best, one of the best teams right now in Belgium. They won several, championships, several cups up there. And the game is tomorrow, and it's like 4 p.m., I guess.
What 4 time p.m. is it? German 4, time.
So 4 German
and,
time.
And I think if you wanted to watch it, you could catch it on ESPN. Is that Deportes? I can't tell. I think that's ESPN Deportes. Don't quote me on that, though.
Yeah, you can watch it pretty much everywhere.
A lot easier to find a stream in your native language if Spanish is not something you speak. And as someone who doesn't speak Spanish, I'll probably try and find a stream in English, because for all the different heritage I have, I don't speak many languages.
Okay, that's cool. So yeah, with that, I guess we'll talk to you guys later. Take care.